Blog Talk Radio.
You abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore. Just a vacancy. Love don't live here anymore. When you lived inside of me, there was nothing I could conceive that you wouldn't do for me. Trouble seemed so far away. You changed it right away, baby. You abandoned me. Love don't live here anymore.
Don't appreciate sacrifice by me. Money that I threw away, not a dime on me. But all I see is negativity. I think I'm getting clarity. Am I asking too much when I need for you to hold me to make me feel better? Am I asking too much when I'm asking for the little things you do to bring me laughter?
Am I asking too much?
I can't wait another minute because I'm running on empty.
Internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Black women. There are some in society that say that black women are angry, that black women have attitude, that black women have dozens of issues, that black women don't make good wives, that black women love to have babies out of wedlock with thugged out criminals, that black women are arrogant and boastful about their level of career success, their level of education, and their level of financial self-sufficiency. Black women. There are some in society that say black women are promiscuous, that black women love to show off their chest, their butt, their bodies, that black women raise their daughters to resent black men, that black women are unable to raise well-adjusted young black men by themselves, that black women are three times more likely to remain single well past the age of 35 than the average Caucasian woman, Hispanic woman, and or Asian woman. Black women. With me tonight is a well-known author and motivational speaker who has taken it upon himself to write a book about the challenges and invalid stereotypes that plague black women in American society. His book examines the causes behind the myths and the facts behind the realities of life in the United States as a black woman. Who is this man who seeks to open up yet another dialogue on why there is so much animosity directed towards the black female, and particularly the single black female? His name is Hassani Pettifer, and tonight, buckle your seatbelts, folks, for what is sure to be a provocative, enlightening, and maybe even highly volatile conversation, as Mr. Pettifer is ready and thoroughly prepared to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Is this the Alan Roger Curry of Mode 1 fame? Oh, my God.
You're really good at this.
I gotta ask you though, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how'd you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about
white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, mode one. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, February 4th, and tonight we're going to examine and discuss black women and ask the question, does society hate on black women too much? Do black men hate on black women too much? Even more so, do even black women hate on other black women too much? My guest for the evening has written a book that tackles this subject, and he covers all various aspects of this discussion topic, this argument, and I can't wait to get the discussion going. But first, I have to let you know, get out the tissues. I know my fans, they start crying when I tell them I'm not going to have a show. I'm not going to have a show next week. I'm not going to have a show next week. I know. Don't cry. Yeah, I'm not going to have a show next week because I'm going to be in the midst of traveling. But 2 weeks from tonight, I will be back. I don't know specifically who my guest will be at this moment, but rest assured, I'll have another new episode, a new guest, new topic for discussion. So I will be back Thursday, February 18th. Thursday, February 18th, but next week, which is Thursday, February 11th, I will not have a show, so you should take that time to listen to one of my old shows, one of my archive shows. That's right. Listen to one of my archive episodes, the ones you missed. Now, for those that haven't missed an archive episode, God bless you. God bless you. If you've listened to all my episodes up to this point, God bless you. But if you've missed one, two, three episodes, use the time next week to listen. But, yeah, I will not be on the air. You know I got to give love to my listeners. I give love to all of my listeners from the East Coast to the West Coast, from Alaska to the southern tip of Florida. But I give special kudos always to my chat room listeners. I got Ballers Radio in my chat room. I got Chat Cafe with KP In my chat room, I got Duchess of Wisdom. In my chat room, I got about 10 guests. In my chat room, speaking of my guest, I got my guest for the night. In my chat room, got my loyal listener, Hypert, in my chat room. I got Ronan Soul. Yes, that's right, Ronan Soul, one of my most loyal and supportive listeners. He's in the chat room as Open Your Soul Radio. Much props to him. I got my college classmate, the lovely and intelligent Miss Vanessa Turner. Vanessa Turner is in my chat room, and I'm sure there will be a number of other men and women coming in my chat room as the conversation gets going. And some other special shout-outs will be, of course, the lovely and talented and funny. Just the adjectives, just I can't think of enough to describe my beautiful girlfriend, Miss Tyler Collins. People have been teasing me. I had a Blog Talk Radio host. She said, Alan, it's so cute to see you all in love and stuff. Yeah, that's right. The Mold One author, the man who wrote the book on how to approach women and let them know you want to get in their pants. No, it wasn't just about casual sexy. I was just being lighthearted. I teach men also how to approach women and have serious relationships. But yes, Al Curry's all like in lovey-dovey mode. Stuff lovey-dovey mode. My brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry. My cousin, J.P. Jones from Chicago. At the ball, my other cousin in Maplewood, New Jersey. Christopher Curry, my cousin in Detroit, Michigan. Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin Van Pulliam III. No Head, a.k.a. Metal Haze. My frat brother, Jeff Kenton, Corey Pullman, Maurice Taylor, Danella D. Hall, Frava Burgess, Temple Hemphill, Will Wavy, a Blog Talk Radio colleague, Mel Hopkins, Kathy Holloway Hill, Chad Hunter, just a number of people I can give shout-outs to. Much love and respect to all my Blog Talk Radio colleagues, all my Blog Talk Radio colleagues, all my Facebook friends. Much love to you. Super Bowl is coming up Sunday. Who you got? Who you got? Who you got? Super Bowl, you got the Colts. Got the Colts or you got the Saints? Is it going to be the Colts? Is it going to be the Saints? I'm going with the Colts. That's right. Of course, I live in Indiana. Even though, believe it or not, the Colts are not my number one favorite team. They're my number two favorite team. I'm a Bears fan. Been a Bears fan all my life. But if the Bears are 1A, the Colts are 1B in terms of my loyalty to them. I love the Colts, and I think they're going to win the Super Bowl. That's my prediction. I'm just hoping for a good game, though. I just want a good game. I want a good game. You know what made me mad this week? If you pay attention to my Facebook page, is this whole flap about President Obama criticizing Las Vegas. Man, you're talking about something that's just overblown. President Obama didn't say don't go to Vegas. He didn't say don't spend money in Vegas. He just said don't spend money that you don't have. That's what he said. He said if you got money that's earmarked for other priorities, such as putting your kids through college, don't use that money in Vegas. That's what he was saying. Because that's why the economy is jacked up as it is, because we got too many people, including myself at times. I'll include myself, at least periodically, spending money on stuff that's just not important. You know? So I was feeling what President Obama was saying. But yeah, you know, people are, why is he just dogging out Vegas? He's anti-Vegas. Man, shut up. That's what I say. Just shut up. Shut up. I see somebody else came in our chat room. Red State Pariah and Vizuri. I hope I pronounced those correctly. Vizuri came in my chat room. Speaking of cities, man, L.A. Mayor, I just read today, he laid off 1,000 city employees to so that his city can meet their budget. That's messed up. I mean, nobody wants the city to be operating on a deficit, but man,
you know, I just feel sorry for the thousands of employees that got laid off. I mean, that's just messed up. I hate to see anybody unemployed, you know, but that just shows you the recession is real. Charlie Sheen from Two and a Half Men series is going to be charged with felony assault against his wife. Charlie know he need to be listening to Upfront and Straightforward. He know he need to be listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. That's right. He wouldn't be slapping his wife around and hitting his wife around because my show is all about love. Love, just romance, love, and great advice that leads to love, all that good stuff. The Oscar nominations came out this week. Avatar, as expected, had a lot of nominations. Some underrated movie, The Hurt Locker. You know what I was looking for? I was looking for Obsessed. I thought Obsessed was going to get some kind of Oscar nomination. You know, the movie that's the black version of Fatal Attraction with Beyonce, I thought that was going to get an Oscar nomination. I thought, you know, I mean, it had some profound lines in there, you know. Yeah, I mean, it was like, she said, what did Beyonce say? Bitch, breathe. That's classic stuff, man. I mean, shoot. She said, bitch, breathe. Who didn't see Obsession, man? That's a classic.
Stupid.
That's a classic movie. This should have got at least 3 Oscar nominations. She said, I'll show you crazy. Beyonce, she's like, I'll show you crazy. She said, I'll wipe the floor with your little skinny ass. Bitch, breathe. Boy, Obsessed. That's right. Yeah, speaking of Beyonce, she walked away from the Grammys with 6 awards. So I guess we can conclude she's a better singer than an actress. Better singer than actress, but hey, at least she's doing her thing. At least she's doing her thing. Now, she represents the sisters well with her song, you know, Put a Ring on It. And that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about the sisters. So I'm going to go into introducing my guest for the evening. My guest for the evening is the chairman and CEO of his own company that specializes in the training and development of individuals. He's married with three children, and his company emphasizes personal growth and development, wealth creation, interpersonal relationships. My guest has been a keynote speaker for various events all across the country. He's been a guest on a number of radio shows, other been featured in media publications, and he has 3 books on the market. One is called Black Thighs, Black Guys, and Bedroom Lies. That just rhymes. I like the way that just flows. Black Thighs, Black Guys, and Bedroom Lies. Then his other book is called Pimping from the Pulpit to the Pews. And the book we're going to emphasize tonight, this is his recent book. It's called, provocative title here, Why We Hate Black Women. Why We Hate Black Women. Subtopic or subtitle, Deconstructing the Paradox of Black Female Masculinity. On behalf of Upfront and Straightforward and the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network, listeners, give it up for book author, motivational speaker, Mr. Hassani Pettiford.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show. How you doing tonight?
Hey, my listeners got to give you love. Hold up, Hassani, for 1 second while they give you the love you deserve. Listeners, that's what I'm talking about. I can't let you talk until my listeners give you the love. How you doing, Hassani?
I'm doing phenomenal, brother. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm doing well as can be for a brother who lives in a cold-weather city, cold-weather state. You know, last week I was teasing all my listeners who live in warm weather cities and warm weather states, because I was going to come out with my book called Why I Hate People Who Live in Warm Weather Cities. But here we here tonight to talk about sisters being hated on, and I'm going to ask you right off the bat, what made you write this book, and more specifically, what provoked you to come up with the title of that book?
Well, it's interesting. I get this question all the time. And listen, the reality is this. First of all, let's just get something out of the way. I'm married to a beautiful black woman. Let's just get that straight. First and foremost, I have three beautiful black girls. I have a 5-year-old named Paris, a 4-year-old named Madison, a 2-year-old Savannah, and one more on the way. So I'm living in a household with a whole lot of women. And so when I look at my daughters, and then when I look at the relational state of affairs of many black women in society today, I'm disheartened, because when you consider the fact that 42.3% of black women, according to statistics, have never been married, in comparison to 12% of white women. When you consider the fact that by the age of 40, black women are 5 times more likely to be unmarried than their white female counterpart. When you consider the fact that 70% of our households, according to statistics, are run by single parent mothers, women, it would seem as though there's an issue going on in male-female relationships. And so I wanted to get the answers to many questions. Why is it that so many black women are single and alone? Why is it that they've been abandoned and rejected and denied and abused and hated on and devalued? And so the search for these answers have actually opened up a cultural Pandora's box of issues that have been a major area of dissension between black men and women for so long. And so it's a hard-hitting book, is very impactful, and it is opening up the minds of so many people. See, when people just read the title, they hate me. But when they read the content in the book, they love me. And so I would encourage everybody who's on the chat, who's on the phone, go to the website, whywehatblackwomen.com, get your copy today, and let it begin to transform your life and your relationships.
Okay, well said. Now, what group or faction in society, in your opinion, do you think hates on black women more than anyone else? Is it black men? Is it white people? Is it the media? Is it just society in general? Is it one
particular society in general?
I think that
we as a collective group of people have been socialized to have a disdain and a hatred towards black women. Now, mind you, I do have a chapter that deals with black men entitled Why Black Men Don't Want You, and we can get into that. But we're also talking about how white society and hip-hop and media and how women hate themselves and how they hate on other women. So I think that we all have played our part in the devaluing of black women in America. It's not just men. And many people often make the assumption that the we that I'm talking about is black men. But actually, it's all of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think it would be a foregone conclusion to say that you believe Do you believe that black women experience, say, more disappointment, more frustration, more abuse in regards to, particularly in regards to dating relationships, than, say, the average Caucasian woman or Hispanic woman or Asian woman?
I don't know if black women have a monopoly on pain in comparison to other women. I mean, my focus really was not a comparative analysis between white, Asian, Latino, and other types of women, but more of a focus and an emphasis on our women. I will say that when you look at statistics, black women lead the pack of victims of domestic violence. When you look at the statistics, black women lead the pack in terms of HIV cases in America. So it seems that a lot of the things that they have gone through disproportionately are greater and higher in numbers in terms of percentages than all other cultures of women in this country. So, yeah, I think that their hardship is very unique. They've been through so you have to understand that what we go through as a people in terms of our relationships oftentimes is different than what other people go through. Now, yes, other cultures can experience the same problems that we experience. We know this. But because we're black people in America, and there's certain discrimination and bigotry and prejudices that we have to go through, it spews into our relationships and how we deal with one another. So our experience is very unique. And so when we look at what has taken place to the black woman, her experience has been very unique. Black women in this country have always been a double minority. Think about it. They belong to two groups of which they are almost invisible. When you think of of the black race, you typically think in the context of men. When you think of women as a gender group, you typically think in the context of white women. So in essence, she's invisible, but she's faced a double burden and a double oppression. And so the book talks about that, but it tells two sides of one story. It talks about what has been done to the black woman that has contributed to her being who she is, the way she is, and the way she's perceived, but it also talks about what she has done to contribute to her own problem. So I think it's a very balanced approach that will really, really, really cut into the minds and the hearts of people and cause them to self-reflect to figure out what we need to do collectively to change our situation.
Now, you mentioned there is a chapter 7, Why Black Men Don't Want You. How much are black men to blame for many of the issues that black women experience?
Black men have played a large part in the degradation and the devaluing and the hatred of black women. But let me just say this as it relates to this particular chapter. I mean, when you look at the U.S. Census poll of 2009, the fact is, according to their numbers, 310,000 black men married white women. But...
How many did you say?
310,000, roughly, those are the numbers, of black men married black women in the year 2009. However, 4.1 million black men married black women. So disproportionately, we see more black men staying with black women than leaving black women. But there is a growing migration of black men who are departing, who are abandoning black women and choosing the alternative other, whether it be white, Asian, Latino, or whatever other culture may be out there. And so we deal with why. You know, I have a section in that particular chapter based upon a study that I found online. It was a guy who actually did some research and began to interview men and came up with a study entitled The Top 10 Reasons Why It's Hard to Date a Black Woman. Can I read this list quickly to your listeners?
Sure.
According to this list, this was conducted by a man by the name of Matthew Lynch. He came up with 50 reasons, but these are his top 10. Number one, black women make black men feel underappreciated, unwarranted, and irresponsible and regressive. Number two, black women are too aggressive and no longer patient in waiting on the pursuit of a man. Number three, black women are strong-headed, too independent, which presents great challenges in relationships. Number four, black women are masculine in that they are controlling and want to run the relationship. Number five, black women expect too much. They're gold diggers who will not look twice at a blue-collar man. Number six, black women are hot-headed and have bad attitudes. Number seven, black women stop caring about their appearance after a certain age. Number eight, black women are not as sexually open as other races, especially in regards to oral sex. Number nine, black women's tolerance is far too low. They're no longer empathetic to the black man's struggle in America. And number 10, black women do not cater to their men. Now, before your listeners respond, what's interesting about this list is that everything about this list is absolutely true. However, everything about this list is also absolutely false. It depends upon who's being compared to this list, because the reality is there's a whole lot of black women that represent every single aspect of this list. We know many of them. But at the same time, there are a slew of black women that don't represent this list one iota. But there are others who represent elements of this list, whether they're aware of it or not. The problem is, so many black men who've had bad relationships and bad experiences with a number of black women all of a sudden have generalized all black women to say that all black women are like the ones that they dated. So these cultural stereotypes have gone out there, and it's been perpetuated in society, perpetuated in media, and so now we've force our black women to fit inside a box that they do not belong in, and it's affected their happiness, affected their relationships, affected every area of their life, because you have all of these stigmas that have been placed upon them that are not necessarily fair or true. And so it's negatively affecting how black women are perceived in America.
Let me ask you this. Do you think black women who grew up in, say, a middle-class home environment with, say, the traditional two-parent family, do you think they suffer many of the same challenges as, say, women who might have grown up in a lower-income single-parent home? Do you think those are factors or not really?
I think that when you're dealing with anything, you can never deal with absolutes. I mean, you always have to deal in general terms, because if you don't, someone will call in or get on that chat and tell you how you're wrong for saying what you're saying. But I think that, yes, there have been major differences. I mean, when you deal with economic challenges or financial challenges coming from a single-parent home in an urban area, there are different problems that you may possibly have than if you come from a two-parent home living in the suburbs with opportunity and advantage. Of course there's going to be differences, but there are also some similarities as well. It just depends upon the parenting. It depends upon the home. It depends upon the environment. So many factors come into play, and so we are seeing differences. I mean, even across cultural lines, if you consider the fact that, you know, a lot of us come from urban areas, and if you look at white folks who come from suburban areas as an example, there are differences. So is it the differences based upon race, or is it based upon socioeconomic conditions? I mean, there's so many factors involved that contribute to the problem. So I would say, yes, there are differences and there are similarities. It just really depends on the individual.
Now, is it to, you know, one of the complaints I hear from men, among others, and I think a lot of them were incorporated into those top 10 lists you had, but why do you think over the last, I want to say roughly 10 years, because when I was younger, I don't want to date myself, but I'm not the most young spring chicken in the world. I never heard this prevalence of women saying, I'm a strong, independent black woman. But in the last 5-10 years or so, I hear this more and more and more. Do you think it's to a black woman's benefit, particularly a single black woman's benefit, to present herself to men and society as a strong, successful, independent black woman?
You know, I think it is absolutely to a black woman's detriment to wave the flag and hold up the banner, you know, telling the world how strong and independent she is. It sends the wrong message. If that's who you are, you don't have to broadcast it. That's just who you are. And see, black women in America have been forced to play a role that they were never designed to play. They've been forced to be strong, forced to be independent based upon circumstances. But it's not necessarily something to be proud of, and I'm going to tell you why. When you think of the word independence, we use this word constantly, but we don't really have a concept of what this means. When you look up the word in the dictionary or the Rogers Thesaurus, this is how it's defined. Independence is defined as self-determining, self-governing, self-reliant, self-sufficient, and separate. But likewise, the word dependent means to rely upon for support, to place trust or confidence in. And so when these operational definitions are truly understood, they send a very powerful message. See, women who remain so committed to being independent within their relationships often leave their men with no role to play. And so in essence, what she's saying is, I don't trust you. I don't have confidence in you. I will not rely on you. I'm going to be self-sufficient, self-determined, and self-governing. And that's good as long as you are by yourself. But once you enter into a relationship, there should be no room for independence, whether it's being expressed by the male or the female. In essence, there should be a interdependence or a codependency, because every man gets into a relationship because he wants to be loved. He wants to be needed. He wants to be wanted. He wants to be dependent upon. And so if he doesn't play that role in your life, then he's void in essence. What purpose does he serve? And that's a lot of the problems that are taking place. You got so many mothers teaching their daughters, or mothers and fathers, parents teaching their daughters, be strong, be independent, don't rely on no man, do for yourself, have you on this, have you on that. And a lot of that stuff was based upon circumstances that the mother or the parents had gone through. And so they're trying to protect their child to prepare them for what may happen. The problem is it hasn't been a complete teaching. Though they've taught them how to be independent, they haven't necessarily taught them how to operate in a successful relationship, how to treat that man when you get in that relationship, how to be treated by that man. So all of us are in these relationships, and we're independent of one another. We're competitors of one another as opposed to completers. And so there's all types of issues and power struggles that exist because of the teachings that we've received. And so that's why many of our relationships are all jacked up. So, yes, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Listeners, if you want to call in with a question and or comment for my guest for the evening, Hassani Pettiford, The number is 646-478-5710. I see actually a number of calls in my queue. I'm going to get to you in a moment, but I'm going to take a quick intermission break. But before I take the intermission break, I want to highlight some people who have come into my chat room since I gave my chat room shout-outs. I got Cali Champ in the chat room. Cali Champ, Conscious Black Man, is in the chat room. Cruiser24, loyal, supportive listener of Upfront and Straightforward. He's in the chat room. Devilish Tricks is in the chat room. Gerald Runner Show, Runnels, I hope I pronounced that right, is in the chat room. A number of guests. Miss Quiet Storm is in the chat room. R Jam 1974 is in the chat room. I will be back in a moment with more questions, more discussion points with Mr. Asani Pettiford, author of the book Why We Hate Black Women, Deconstructing the Paradox of Black Female Masculinity. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously, and you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com, and remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. My guest this evening is a motivational speaker who speaks all across the country, and he's also a book author who likes to discuss topics that are relevant, particularly to the black community. He has books out with titles such as Black Thighs, Black Guys, and Bedroom Lies, Pimping from the Pulpit to the Pews, and his most recent book, which is the one we're discussing this evening, is entitled Why We Hate Black Women, Deconstructing the Paradox of Black Female Masculinity, and his name is Hassani Pettiford. If you want to call in with a question or a comment, number is 646-478-5710. Again, that's 646-478-5710. I'm going to see if I have a couple of callers. Sometimes I can't tell who's listening and who really wants to say something. I'm going to go right now with area code 317, prefix 453. 317, prefix 453. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest, Hassani Pettiford. Are you just listening or do you have a question or comment?
I have a question and a comment. I want to say good evening, gentlemen. This is Ronan Soul 75.
What's up, Ronan Soul?
Yes, I'm good. I had a distinct question. I can never get a clear, concise answer to it. But how would you define woman bashing?
How would you define?
Is that question towards me?
Yes.
Well, I think woman bashing is what we see a lot of times when we listen to YouTube video clips and Google video where men just have nothing positive to say about women at all. Everything is negative. Everything is accusatory. Everything is blaming them for the problems that they deal with. It's not balanced. And I think when you take an unbalanced approach, it's unhealthy. My thing is there's a difference between criticism and constructive critique. I can critique you in your situation to the point where I encourage you to maybe take a look at yourself and work on yourself. But if I just criticize and judge and condemn and repudiate and complain and there's no healing that comes forth, that can be constituted or considered a women bashing. I think men do it towards women. I think women do it towards themselves. I think we've all participated in women bashing and male bashing. And that's one of the problems. We point the finger at each other for so long, not realizing that there are three fingers pointing right back at us. So in essence, you got to look at yourself three times as much as you do the other person, because there's a big plank in your eye and you're looking at the speck in someone else's. And that's why there's so much of a wedge and a gap between black male female relationships, because all we're doing is looking at each other rather than the man or the woman in the mirror.
Yes, I understand, because I run a show myself, and like basically, yeah, I'll sit there and go on a very harsh critique, but then there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. So I understand if it's just nothing but nonstop brutality with nothing redeeming in the end. But it seems to me lately that any kind of critique, if you're not sitting there co-signing, if you're not co-signing or you're lauding, putting crowns on court jesters, basically, then honestly, then anything you say is more like a bashing type deal. Like, you have to sit there and say she is everything regal or whatever, and I just had to get an understanding of it because it was a little annoying.
Well, you know what? It's deep. We as a people, we are so sensitive, you know, and oftentimes when there's been an atmosphere of disdain created in our community. I mean, it's deep. I went into a barbershop 2 days ago to hand out some flyers for my book release party that's coming up this Wednesday in South Orange, New Jersey, right? And so I went into this barbershop, handed a flyer to one of the brothers getting his hair done, and he said, why we hate black women? I tell you. And he began to talk about how black women are the most disrespecting women towards their black men, and the Bible even talks about it. The Bible will tell you how evil and wicked and diabolical the black woman is. And I'm like, well, what translation are you reading? What scripture did you get that from? This is amazing. When you get men in their own social space and women in their own social space, the types of crazy things that you will begin to hear. And that is just a microcosm of what's taking place all over the country. And so if we would learn to be open and honest in our communication and to self-reflect and to really have serious dialogue that could lead to something, I don't think that it would be considered bashing. The problem is our motive and intent is oftentimes wrong, or our delivery is not one that is, approachable, and it just doesn't work.
Well, I mean, I understand that. It's like there's many times where that label's been cast out just freely where it comes down to a matter of a man's preference. Now, if you're 400 pounds in a cat suit, I'm not looking at you. But honestly, they honestly believe that that is bashing. And I just needed to understand a definition of it because I kept asking, like, there's different things, like, say, with gay bashing where you have people get hospitalized for that stuff. But I've always asked the question, like, when's the last time a woman has honestly been hospitalized for being brutally honest about what's going on? So I'll be more inclined to listen to a woman that's more like, that not only reads or actually adheres to the words of Proverbs 31 rather than a Steve Harvey or E. Lynn Harris book.
Right. Well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think that we can make a lot of valid points. I mean, there's a lot of jokers that I hear on YouTube all the time that make valid points, but their delivery is just so nasty and accusatory that it's hard to hear what they're actually saying. And so I think as long as you take a balanced approach and you make it clear, listen, women, you have issues. And you know what? We have issues too. Now let's talk about all of our issues. Let's put it all on the table and figure out what we can do together or separate to work these issues out. But as long as things appear to be unbalanced and one-sided, it will always be taken in the wrong way. So you can have a good message, but it's taken wrong because of the delivery and the approach. And I think that's what this book will begin to do. As people begin to read, you know, Why We Hate Black Women and get past the title, they will every single person who's read this book thus far has had nothing but positive things to say because the content is so rich, it's so balanced in its approach, and it's really bringing healing to men, women, and our relationships. And that was the purpose of me writing it, and that's why I encourage everyone to get their copy today.
I'll definitely check out the book, as I just always wondered, like, the whole thing, the whole strong and independent thing is kind of more or less a sick joke, because if you're strong and independent, why do you have your hands out? I've always asked that, but, you know, I'm continue listening, and, you know, hey, you've been saying some serious points. So, yeah, I'm going to pay attention and just, you know, keep back in the chat room.
All right, Ronan, appreciate you calling in. And any other callers? I see some other callers, but you don't have your hands raised. If you want to raise your hand, I think you press 1. That lets me know you want to speak. But again, the number is 646-478-5710. Asani, why do you think many sisters? Well, I had a sister on here that opened up my 2010 episodes. Her name is Chanel Cooper Sykes, and she has a delightful book geared towards women, Stilettos in the Kitchen. But anyway, one thing she promotes is women being more feminine or rediscovering their femininity. And she even promotes the idea of women being submissive to their men. And I noticed during that interview, she had a lot of women just hating, talking about the word hate. They was hating on her big time. Why do you think a lot of sisters have this, like, adverse reaction to the idea of being ultra feminine and or submissive to their men?
Well, number one, the word submission has been considered a curse word in the minds of a lot of black women in this country because, you know, when you look at our cultural experience is very unique. A lot of black women came from households where there was no father, there was no daddy, there was no husband, so there was no one to submit to. So if I've been forced to raise these kids by myself, pay the mortgage by myself, do the homework, deal with the PTA meetings, you know, I got to take care of family, in-laws, I got to raise my children, help the community out. I've done everything on my own all these years by myself. That's the legacy I saw passed down from grandma to mother, to me, to now my child. And so all I know is independence. I don't have any concept of anything else. So now when I've been holding it down for so long, and then some joker comes up in my life, and now he wants me to bow down and submit to him, they laugh because there's been I shouldn't say no. I don't want to speak in absolutes. Oftentimes there haven't been examples of submission that we've seen. A lot of young black girls have never seen a man figure treat her mother in a particular way. A lot of boys don't understand manhood and what it means to be a man, because they had no example of that. So even though in principle it's a phenomenal concept that does work, in reality for many of us, it's never been it's never been something that we've seen. And in my opinion is this: no woman would have a problem truly submitting to a man if that man was submissive to his God. See, in essence, the problem is so many men are so archaic and traditional in their thinking, and they're very abusive, they're very controlling, very manipulative, and try to put black women in some subservient role, do what I say, don't ask no questions, shush and submit, and so it doesn't work out. And so if black men truly were who they were supposed to be and handled the fort and took care of their responsibilities, I think that black women would be more willing to submit, to try it out and to see if it works. But, I mean, a lot of women often complain that the men ain't handling their business. They don't have things in control. So how can you expect me to submit to that? Now, as it relates to femininity, I think that, I mean, the subject, the subtitle of the book is Deconstructing the Paradox of Black Female Masculinity. Whether you're talking about all of the female writers like the Bell Hooks of the world, right, the Angela Davis, all of them have said that black women have been stripped of their femininity. If you go all the way back to the plantation, what took place on the plantation and during the antebellum period and Reconstruction period and the Civil Rights era in the 80s and the 90s and the new millennium, the way that the system has been set up, it has stripped her of her femininity. And so all of them are calling for black women to become more feminine. So, but when a man says it, we're demonized and we're coming across as a female bashing when that's not the case. I think we have switched roles. There was a time where there was a whole lot of pretty women and working men, but now we have a whole lot of pretty men and working women. So I think, in essence, we've raised our girls to be men, and we've raised our boys to be women. We switch roles, and that's why there's so much confusion and chaos in our relationships.
Okay. Now, speaking of these, before I ask you that question, one of the complaints I get from a lot of brothers is that, mainly from the more college educated type brothers, they say that they feel like a lot of sisters gravitate towards the rough, thuggish type brothers. Do you think men with a criminal record or men who exhibit very rough, thuggish type behavior tend to be more sexually appealing to a lot of black women? And do our college educated intellectual type brothers often perceived as weak or easy to manipulate and easy to control?
I think that's absolutely the case. You do have that element. Often, you know, as I travel all over the country, I talk to so many men, and men are just confused because they're not understanding what women really want. In one breath, some, not all. Some black women say they want themselves a good black man, but when they find it, they may not like the package it comes in. And so oftentimes you heard the phrase that, you know, nice guys always come in last place. You know, there's a chapter in my book entitled, Can a Sister Get Some Love? And it talks about a lot of the dating options that black women have. Now, the last portion of the chapter is entitled, You're a Great Guy, But. And so we're seeing that a lot of good guys are being passed up because they don't have enough swag. They're not thug enough. They're not hard enough. They're not street enough. They're too nice. They're too good. And so oftentimes they get put in the friend box or the BFF category. And so the chemistry that he's looking for doesn't exist because there's nothing appealing about him. See, there's something about the thug. It's not like a woman wants a thug. It's not like a woman wants a womanizer. But oftentimes, these type of men have a certain level of confidence that we don't see, according to women, in the nice guy or the good guy. They have a certain level of confidence, a certain level of charisma. There's certain elements of their character that are appealing, more so than the fact that he's just a no-good joker who's involved in criminal activity and has no type of responsibility. And so oftentimes we're in see, the problem is the selection process. We haven't been taught as men and women how to properly select the person that we're seeking. Oftentimes our relationships are based upon physical attraction and emotional desirability. And so oftentimes it's based upon matters of the heart, not logic, not reason. Because when we get into relationships and realize that people don't have the social skills or the relational skills to maintain a successful relationship, then we wonder what went wrong. Well, we were looking at the wrong thing. thing. And if we better knew how to select the right type of person, we wouldn't have all the problems that we have today. So in essence, yes, men don't know how to choose, women don't know how to choose, and we often wind up with people that will ruin and destroy and intoxicate our lives and our relationships. And I think we both fall victim to that type of reality.
We've been talking about strong black women. I know it's in your book. You have this comparison of strong black women to certain fictional superheroes. Explain that to my listening audience.
It's deep. In the black community, black women have been, you know, trained and taught to be strong. And oftentimes, you know, this whole concept of the superwoman, I mean, we've even heard it perpetuated in a lot of the music that we listen to. You know, Alicia Keys and another artist had a song called Superwoman. And what I'm saying in this particular section of the book, Too Strong for Your Own Good, is that oftentimes when you look at a superhero, whether it be like a Superman or a Spider-Man or whatever, or a Batman, oftentimes they lived very peculiar lifestyles. Number one, if you think about it, superheroes are always self-sacrificing, right? They possess a strong moral code, including the willingness to risk their own safety in exchange for the benefit of everyone else. Well, black women have been the caregivers for so long that they've neglected their own health, their own happiness, their own well-being. Number two, oftentimes superheroes have a very tragic past. Think about it. Batman suffered the loss of his parents at the hands of a street thug. Spider-Man's close uncle was murdered by the thief, and the list just goes on and on. Black women oftentimes have very horrible pasts, whether they've had bad relationships with their fathers or their brothers or past relationships, and so oftentimes those past tragic experiences spill into their present and affect their relationships. Number three, you know, superheroes have all type of superpowers and abilities. I mean, the list can go on and on. Well, black women have mastered skills or played dual roles, meaning they've run households, they've been the sole provider, they've managed finances, and a long list of other tasks that proves that she has a strength that she's been forced to develop. Number four, they have secret identities. Oftentimes, you don't know the true identity of a superhero. They have split personalities. And we're finding that a lot of black women have been forced to wear the mask. You know, it was that American poet, Paul Laurence Dunbar, who said that we wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. I mean, it's a powerful quotation, but it speaks to the fact that oftentimes black women have been forced to play so many different roles, wearing so many different hats, you know, shifting between so many different roles in the lives of other people, that oftentimes they get caught up and lost in the transition of these roles, that it negatively affects her. Number five, superheroes oftentimes are victims of public disdain. As much as Batman, Spider-Man, X-Men, and all the rest of them have done to benefit the society, they've often been demonized and considered weird or strange and something's wrong with them by the public. Black women as well, as wonderful as they are, as strong as they are, as much as they've contributed to the world, what do? We turn around and we demoralize them, we devalue them, we degrade them. I mean, the same thing is happening. And last but not least, a lot of superheroes have failed relationships. In essence, their superpowers and their strength have been used for the community or used for a particular society to their own detriment, because it doesn't allow them to have intimate relationships with the ones that they love. Either the ones that they loved have been killed, they've been separated from them, something has happened. And a lot of black women have given up these romantic relationships because they have been the sole provider and nurturer to the world. And so oftentimes we don't see them in intimate settings because of what they've been forced to do and how they've been forced to act in society. So when you look at the superhero caricatures, there's a complete parallel to black women in America. I went to a marriage conference just a couple of months ago. There was a sister who was in that marriage conference, just married a couple of months. We all had to name positive qualities about our spouses. This particular woman said something that almost knocked me off my seat. She said, listen, My husband is, I forget the characteristics she gave, but he was a wonderful guy. And because of how he is and who he is, I no longer have to be strong. It was a very powerful message to me. See, black women can be in a position where they can now feel free to give up their strength once they come in contact with a strong black man. The problem is there's a whole lot of issues in black male-female relationships where we're not properly matched, and we feel like we've got to maintain our strength, maintain our independence, because we don't have quality relationships. I think no black woman on the face of this earth will have a problem giving up all this strength and independence if she came in contact with the right one. And so we're at the end of the day trying to build happy, harmonious, mutually beneficial, long-lasting, committed relationships between our people.
Go to the phone lines again. Area code 111, which must be an internet call. Area code 111, you're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest for the evening, Hassani Pettiford. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, how's everybody doing today?
Can you speak up? I can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now? I said, how's everybody doing today?
I can hear you, but your voice is very low.
All right, you know what? Put me on mute while I just listen to you.
Oh, okay. Now I'm going to go to area code 202, prefix 368. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest for the evening, Mr. Sonny Pettiford. What's your question or comment?
Oh, I had a comment for you, Roger Curry. Listen, that guy almost put me to sleep.
Who is it?
But it's a real black, 202. Hey, why men hate black women? I don't think brothers hate black women. What I think is happening is that for the last 30 years, brothers have been hearing, you know, sisters are having a lot of complaints about black men, which is, a lot of it's been true. We don't take care of our families, and, you know, we've been doing a lot of things. But you know what? There's another side to the story that sisters have never told, and it's coming out. And everyone's been analyzed in this country. The white man's been analyzed, the white woman, the black man's been analyzed, but now the black woman is being analyzed, and she doesn't like it. And brothers have legitimate complaints, grievances about black women, as far as attitudes, diva complexes, out of wedlock children. There's a lot of things coming out now. The sisters didn't see it coming, because brothers have been, this thing has been boiling up in a lot of black men for at least 30, 40 years, and it's just coming out. But this is nothing new.
Do you think that's why there's so much animosity right now between black single men and black single women?
Yeah, and I think the animosity is sisters been just raking us over the coals. Every time you see a sister on television, they never had nothing positive to say about black men. It's always negative. We ain't shit. We're in jail. We're gay. We ain't men. And brothers, we've been hearing this, and we've been silent. But now brothers are finally have a way of saying, hey, you know what? There's something else going on here. A lot of these sisters are in their predicament because of poor choices that they've been making. And brothers have legitimate grievances, and sisters don't like it. Okay? Now that brother was talking, to me, he's a classic mangina, and he's the reason why we are in this situation. We need real men to talk about these problems here in America, because they're real. These aren't things that brothers are making up.
Let me stop you. Now, you're saying my guest tonight, you think he's being too soft on sisters? Is that what
Yeah, he is. He is, because sisters love praise, but they're not getting praise anymore. Them days are over. Sisters are getting the hard, they are getting the hard facts from black men. I'm serious. It's only the tip of the iceberg. It's only going to get worse. I'm just telling you, it's only going to get worse.
Okay, well,
you know,
I'm going to let my guest go ahead. Hello? What's your response, Hassani?
Comments like that. You know what? Because whenever you're doing something, you're going to have criticism, whether it's coming from women or men. I've been dogged and repudiated by people just based upon the title. I've been told I hate myself, I hate my mother, I hate my race, I hate my wife, I hate everything about being black. But unfortunately, people don't take the time to read the work. They'll hear a soundbite, a clip, or a title, and will pass off judgment based upon what they don't understand. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, and so the problem is we are not as patient as we need to be in truly hearing one another. I mean, what the brother said has valid points. Yes, black women have been dogging and beating up on black men for a long time, and now we're seeing the pendulum swinging the other way. I'm just saying, at the end of the day, it's no benefit to anybody, because just because they did it for so long and now it's our turn doesn't make it right. But if we take a balanced approach and really deal with the problems and create solutions and be more solution-oriented, maybe we can get over these issues. But if all I do is continue to condemn and repudiate and to degrade women, and if women continue to do the same things to men, we will never have a strong black family. Oftentimes we talk about building a strong black community, but we don't realize the only way to have a strong black community is to have strong black families, and that the foundation of a strong black family is strong black male-female interpersonal relationships. And so his choice of the word mangina, bro, that speaks to his own ignorance. That has nothing to do with me. I'm confident and who I am. I've been doing this for 12 years. I've written 8 books. I've helped heal relationships all over the world. And so I laugh at that because it just speaks to the ignorance of people who listen in. But if he really wanted to have a quality relationship, he doesn't have to read necessarily my book, but there's other books out there that he could read to gain a better understanding, to know what he needs to do to be a better man and to seek out a better woman.
Now, one more question along these lines, and then I'll move on. And by the way, thank you, Erico 202, for your comments. I've heard a lot of brothers say this, and I'm going to get your take on it. A lot of brothers feel like brothers have thicker skin and can take the criticisms of themselves, assuming those criticisms are to some degree valid, better than the average sister can take objective, valid criticisms of herself. What's been your experience and observation?
I think there's truth to that. I have seen that. I mean, usually when I hear women go off and rant about black men, I think they're more accepting of it, or they're less confrontational with it and quick to defend. Whereas generally speaking, I think there is some validity to that. I've seen it. So yes.
Okay.
And I think that we need to, we need to develop tougher skin, thicker skin, and we've got to be able to separate intellect and emotion. Oftentimes we respond very emotionally rather than intellectually. And so it's important that we have an intellectual conversation and come out with solutions and strategies that will heal us, as opposed to getting caught up in emotions that take us in all types of directions that aren't beneficial to anyone involved.
Okay, area code 704. Area code 704. You're now up front and straightforward. Alan Roger Curry, my guest, Sonny Pettifer. What's your question or comment?
Hey, what's going on?
What's happening?
This is Jermaine calling from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
And, I agree with a lot of things that, the brother's saying, but, we forget about the dynamic of, slavery, And
did I lose you? Hello?
Well, if I can comment on his point, I think he's making a very valid point. The book does talk about slavery. There's a chapter entitled From the Auction Block to the Tabletop, and it talks about the historical legacy that black women have had starting on the plantation. See, in order to solve our problems as people, we got to go back to the root of the problem and where it all began. In it, the breakdown of the black family actually did start on the plantation. A lot of the stereotypes that we have, like the mammy caricature of the black woman, the Jezebel character of the black woman, the divide of the family through Willie Lynch, all of that began on the plantation. And until we go back to the root, we can't truly solve our problems. So as people, we need a historical perspective of what has happened to us to truly bring about healing in our lives, in our families, in our communities, and more specifically in our male-female interpersonal relationships. So it makes a valid point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I lost that brother, but let me go to area code 847. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest for the evening, Hassani Pettifer. What's your question or comment?
Mr. Curry, Mr. Pettifer, this is Mr. Chairman out in suburban Chicago. How are you?
Oh, the infamous Bryce. Listeners, if you don't know who Bryce is, all you got to do is listen to my intro, and he says that classic comment about the porch. The porch. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of emails about the porch comment. That's Bryce, who's on the phone now. Bryce, what's your question or comment?
A couple things. Number one, I certainly appreciate almost everything that 202 had said. I will not go into the mangina thing. I see you much more than that. But with regards to what he's saying, that this information is starting to go into come out about black women and their problems and what they do to go in to mess things up, I say that he is absolutely 110% on that. And when he talks about the situation where you know, black women are liking it and black women are getting upset, well, a prime example is you have a conversation with the average black woman that's out there, and she's talking about what men don't do and, like you said, all the stereotypes that we all are placed in a box in, and then you try to go and come up about what or go and try to speak about what their sins and atrocities are. Oh, no. You are shut down immediately. That is, you cannot say anything because they have never, ever done anything like what it is that you're describing or what 202 was describing. So he's right on that. No, they can't take criticism, which really means that they don't want to learn. Why go ahead and talk about you know, black women going with women or marrying women of other races? And there's one of two things that you can do in that situation. Either A, you can go and hoop, holler, scream, and bitch, which is the traditional response that you go and get from that, or B, you can go and say, you know what, if I'm hearing this from enough black men that are saying they're going to other women because of thus and so, maybe there's some legitimacy to what it is that they're saying, and I might want to go ahead and look at that. But see, that requires work, that requires effort, that requires you to go into put yourself out there to say, you know what, I've been wrong. Maybe I should go ahead and see what's right out there and why these guys are going for women of other races. Number two, and then I'll go ahead and close. Mr. Pettiford, you had said, you know, one of the things that we need to do is be patient, that we should just be patient as we study your book, as we study other information that talks about the dysfunctionality within relationships between black men and black women. Well, I will be 40 years old in June. I don't have too much patience left. My window at 40 is not as big as it was at 20. So that means that for 20 years, yeah, I've had these horrible experiences with these horrible individuals. So, you know, how long does a person have to wait? How long do we have to wait? Evidently, even though women have said they've enjoyed your book and once they read it, they love it and perhaps are titillated by it, et cetera, and so forth, I think the question becomes, how long do they retain that information and actually put some of those principles that you are outlining to work? Or do they go back to what's easy, what's simplistic, and start bitching, hollering, and screaming and talking about how black men are terrible? So those are the two points that I would go ahead and raise with regards to some of the comments that have been made tonight.
Well, let me respond by saying that I emphatically agree with what you just said. I already mentioned that. I think that a lot of black women are too sensitive as it relates to the critique that we have about them. They're not looking to necessarily change, just like many men aren't looking to necessarily change, because change is hard. Change is uncomfortable. Change is something difficult to do when you've been a certain way all your life. But I think that we have to be more willing to transform who we are and how we are to have better relationships. At the end of the day, the lowest common denominator in any and every relationship that you enter into is you. Why? Because you take you everywhere you go. So if you've been in one bad relationship, gone into another, into a next, sometimes you got to take a close look at yourself. You know, oftentimes we talk about all the issues we have in our relationships. But when you look at the word issue, think about it. Issues. It's you. So you got to look at yourself. And unfortunately, not enough men and women are willing to look at themselves. But what I mean by the fact that so many women were turned off by the title but are starting to embrace the book, not because I'm just dissing all black men and saying that they're the problems of everything. I'm challenging women in the book. A lot of black women are now taking a look at themselves and reevaluating this whole issue of strength, reevaluating this whole issue of attitude and anger, reevaluating how they are perceived and how they interact with men, because they're hearing a perspective and a side told in a particular way that they either didn't receive before and never heard before. So I've gotten emails from women who said, you know what, I'm working on this issue, I'm working on that issue, I had no idea, I had no clue, but thank you so much for your book and what you're doing. So, brother, I'm with you 100%. I am not, listen, I don't take sides. I'm not for men, I'm not for women, I'm for our people. And whatever we need to address as individuals as well as a collective group to get things back on track, that's what I'm for. You know, now, as it relates to how long do you have to wait in terms of being patient, once again, it goes back to the selection process. You have to better define and clarify who you're searching for and what you're looking for, because oftentimes the origin of a thing will determine its nature. So if it starts off wrong, you have a foundation for a bad relationship. So we need to do a better job. Think about it. If we'd started to date like employers, I think that we would have a much better pool of individuals that we select in our relationship. Think about a resume. A resume lists educational background, work experience, you know, all types of talents and accomplishments that one has. But at the top of the list, you have something called the purpose or intent for applying for that position. I think oftentimes our relationships don't work because we don't have the same expectations. We don't have the same motives. We don't have the same intentions. And so we get into relationships based upon, as I said before, physical attraction, emotional desirability, hopes of what it could be, and don't have a true understanding of who it is we're dating, and then wonder why things go wrong. There's a lot of bad black women out there, but there's a lot of good black women out there. There's a lot of bad black men out there. There's a lot of good black men out there. We just have to do a better job of focusing our vision on the right ones to have the right types of relationships. So I hear you, brother. I respect what you're saying, and that's what my mission is, to wake black men and women up so that we can all change our behaviors, our thinking, our reactions to have more cohesive relationships.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see you 702 and I see you 845. I'm going to get you in a few moments, but I'm getting ready to take another intermission break. But before I go into intermission, I've gotten away from this in 2010, but I got to get back. My listeners have come to expect the Mode 1 chant. So, Asani, I got to indoctrinate you. I have 90% of my guests on my show. I don't know if you're familiar with my book. I have a book out called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking.
Mm.
And it's come a kind of tradition on my show where the guests will stretch out the O's instead of just saying Mode 1. They'll say, Mode 1. So I'm going to get Asani Pettiford to say Mode 1 before I go into my next intermission break.
Mode 1.
That was pretty good. What'd you think, listeners? Mode 1. That's right. But the number, when I get back from intermission, if you want to call in, it is 646-478-5710. 646-478-5710. I will give my guests a chance to get a swig of water. But when we get back, I want to get into some more questions. I want to take some more calls. And we're going to keep this conversation going, because you notice in the second hour, it has become a little bit more intense. So I'm going to, wait a minute, somebody said I didn't play my Mode 1 chant music, and I sure didn't. Here we go.
Alan Roger Curry.
You're up front, straightforward.
Alan Roger Curry.
That is right. I'll be back in just a second. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Bang. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mo One fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mo One.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you got to love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network. We now return to my interview with book author and motivational speaker Hassani Pettiford on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network. We are now deep into the second hour of my interview, and this show episode will go 2 hours. A lot of my episodes go an hour and a half, and as you know, some of them go up to 2 hours because we're having such an interesting conversation. Now, what was interesting, starting with the second hour, conversation got a little more intense. Even I would border on saying a little contentious. I had 202 call in with some harsh criticisms. He was in disagreement with my guest for the evening, which is Hassani Pettiford. 202 felt like my guest was almost defending the black woman and not really being balanced. He feels like all the harsh criticisms that sisters are getting, they deserve to get. And then I have Bryce, who's a frequent listener of the show.
he called in and kind of co-signed with a lot of the things that 202. And so it's definitely, I anticipated this conversation possibly getting into, although I thought it would be the female listeners of my show calling with the some harsh criticisms. Asani, this one I want to ask you. You have a chapter about sisters hating on other sisters, which all brothers know happens. Matter of fact, my girlfriend, my beautiful, lovely girlfriend, I always have to say that because I just love her to death. But she has frequently told me how she is very hurt by the fact that she gets hated on by a lot of sisters. And honestly, I hate to bring up the sensitive issue of complexion, but we all know it's real in the black community. You know, a lot of dark-skinned sisters will hate on light-skinned sisters. And she's been hated on in her life. And, you know, it's hurt her at her core. So what is behind sisters hating on other sisters? What are some of the various ways that sisters hate on other sisters?
Well, I mean, that's a deep chapter, and it's a chapter. See, the thing is, when I write books, oftentimes I'll get the feedback and comments from women as I'm writing them, as well as men. And on this particular chapter, you would be surprised how many emails I got, phone calls I got, messages I got about how their experience growing up was that so many women were hating on them. It's funny how a lot of females often talk about they can't be around too many females. They just can't do it because of the cattiness that takes place, all of the jealousy, the snide remarks, the sucking of the teeth, the rolling of the eyes. It's just like if you have 10 women all in one room, something's bound to happen. Now, whether it's verbal or nonverbal, something is bound to happen. And at the end of the day, a lot of women are in competition over a man. They're competing over the attention of men. In some respects, there's a whole lot of cultural self-esteem issues, I would say, that we suffer from. See, a lot of us have been made to feel inferior or less than what we are because of the color of our skin, the texture of our hair, the broadness of our nose, the thickness of our lips, and our place of origin in the world. So when you have a female that hates herself because of her complexion, hates herself because of her hair, hates herself because of her body type, because unfortunately black women in this country have been compared to this white standard of beauty that many of them didn't fit into. But the closer to that white standard of beauty, the more accepting you were. So if you were a dark-skinned woman with short hair, you weren't appealing to a lot of men. They wanted the light skin. They wanted the long hair. So that caused a lot of trouble and contention between men and women. I mean, between
Hello. Hello, everybody. Hello. I think I just lost my guest. I see him in, it looks like he's still in the queue, but I don't hear his voice anymore. So, that is interesting. I got to get Hassani back. He was in a flow, too. And then he just like went poof. And then he was just gone. I don't know if that's a Blog Talk Radio technical difficulty type thing or what. Hassani, you still there? Hassani. I got to get back Hassani because I got one or two people in the phone queue that I'm sure got a question or comment for Hassani. Matter of fact, let me see what 845 is talking about. 845, are you just listening, or do you have a question or a comment for my guest?
Yeah, I have a question, but I want to wait till he gets back in, though, because I want him to be able to, you know, listen to the question. So.
Okay, yeah. So hopefully, I'm gonna mute you for a second. We got to get my guest back. I don't know what happened. His number was in my phone queue, but I couldn't hear his voice. Maybe his phone went dead or something. But hopefully, in the next few minutes, I will get him back. And in the meantime, I'm going to just go ahead and play another intermission break. So I'm going to be looking to get my guest back on the line. In the meantime, I'm going to take another 3-4 minute intermission break, and I'll be right back.
Another Sound Off Now show starts now.
Yo, sir, this is man. Sound Off Now. What's good, people?
Monday morning, first of the year. How's everybody doing?
Yeah, what's up, this man? Sound off now.
What's up, this man? Sound off now. How's everybody doing? Welcome to a Tantalizing Tuesday on the Sound Off Now show. Hello, how's everybody doing tonight? This is your host, Sound Off Now show, special edition, Monday night special, Crisis in Haiti.
Hey, this your man, Sound Off Now. No, really, it's me this time. I want to take this quick opportunity to invite everyone out to my return to internet radio and my home, of course, Blog Talk Radio, February 16th, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Sound Off Now show, The Rebirth. Same real life, real talk, real issues show format. Just a different attitude and mental concept of bringing you quality shows you deserve. Also, we will still be hitting you with that popular mesh of hot show topics and forums with that blend of music on the side, including hot, hot, hot Club SON Platinum on Fridays, 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time. So join me February 16th, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the rebirth of the Sound Off Now show to the internet airwaves and Blog Talk Radio. I'll see you there.
Looked at myself as a quote-unquote bad boy, at least not in all regards. I mean, I ain't never robbed no bank, and I ain't never skipped 2 weeks of school. So in terms of just various facets of my behavior, I wouldn't necessarily call myself that. But yeah, when it comes to sex, I've definitely been that guy.
Because okay.
I will push a woman's boundaries.
You know what? To be honest with you, I think most women are waiting for a man to do that. Most women want a man to do that. Most women that are coming up in the day and age where a woman is supposed to be the good girl has this idea that a man is going to bring that out of her, and she's hoping that he will. Unfortunately, a lot of men, I won't say a lot of men, but some men have no idea what they're doing. And so they're not able to get that out of her. And then everybody's frustrated. She's frustrated. He's frustrated. Nobody knows why it's not working. But women are like, go ahead, like blindfold her and just take her wherever you want to take her. She's waiting for a man to command that. So because she can't, you know, in some cases be that free to say, okay, blindfold me and take me wherever you want to take me. And it's because in some way she's afraid of where you might take her. You know, depending on what the relationship is like with him and how much she trusts him. And in other cases, she just doesn't know how to say that herself.
No woman wants a man that can't lay it down in the bedroom. Period. And, you know, women, we go through this, oh, I want to be held and I want to cuddle and I want to talk. Yeah, we want to do all of that. But when it comes down to it, we want to be climbing off the ceiling just like everybody else does.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Interview with book, author, and motivational speaker, Hassani Pettiford, on Upfront and Straight Forward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Network.
Okay, I opened up a couple lines, and I'm hearing myself, so somebody got to turn that down. I'm hearing my own feedback. See, you hear my voice twice. 845, do you have me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, hello.
Okay, 845, and I believe I got my guest. Asani, you back on with us?
Yes, I'm back on. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, we were talking about before we had technical difficulties, I had Hassani talking about sisters hating on other sisters. But before I let him continue with that flow, I'm going to first get 845. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, this is Jacob from New York. How do you doing? How are you guys doing today?
Oh, pretty good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. This is my thing. Everything he's talking is on point. Like, everything he's talking in regards to the conflict between black men and black women is all on point. But he's not getting to the main root of the cause. I mean, it's deeper than just brothers and sisters not seeing eye to eye. It's deeper than just we being the opposite sex. When I say it's deeper, meaning that there's the system itself is purposely putting men on a level where they can't feel good about themselves. The reason why I say that is because, as you know, every brother out there wants to feel like he's bringing something to the table. Not only bringing something to the table financially, but you want to feel like, okay, I have value in my relationship. I have importance. And one of the things that a lot of people don't understand, and a lot of people don't seem to, like, for instance, have a huge, you know, grasp of, is the fact that the system itself purposely puts black men in a level where, and I'm not saying this is the majority, I'm saying there are instances where you got brothers out there that have reached the pinnacle of success in this country. But what I'm trying to say is there is a system in place to keep brothers to a certain level where they can't achieve that high level of success financially. The reason why I say that is because there's an article a couple of years ago that came in the New York Times called The Glass Ceiling in Black America. A lot of people don't know what glass ceiling means. Glass ceiling basically means, for those who don't understand what that means, is when you reach a level of education, for instance, you might have 10 years of experience, you might have a PhD. Once you reach that level, the so-called system, which, you know, I don't want to say, because, you know, I don't want people to think I'm racist, but let's be honest, the so-called white society, they put limits on brothers. There's certain limits that brothers can't reach in this society. Because let's be honest, this is a white society. This system was created for and by the white man. Now, people might say, okay, we have a black president, things are different. That's not true. Things are still the same. It's just now things are more, how can I say it, things are more subtle. I mean, like, they're more calm. The people don't come out and say, hey, we're not going to hire you because you're black. Things are not done that way anymore. Things are done in more in a classy, conservative way now. You see what I'm saying, too? Because my whole point is, the main issue, too, is the fact that a lot of brothers are not making the income to provide for themselves, to provide for their family. Because one of the things I know for a fact that's killing a lot of men today is the fact that they don't feel like men, because financially they're hindered from feeling like men. Because the system, because a matter of fact, there was a documentary a couple of, it was done 2 years ago from CNN. It's called Black in America. They showed a black man, and this was a Harvard professor who did this study. A Harvard professor did this study, and then they found out a black man with a college degree, and we're talking about New York City. New York City is prime real estate, prime job market. There was a black brother with a master's degree. And in their study, they found out a black man with a master's degree has no better chance of getting a job compared to a white man with a felony. And in this study, what was remarkable about their study, they said that the white man with a felony with no degree has a better chance of landing a job in this country than a black man with no criminal record with a college degree. So we got to get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is the fact that black men can't.
So you're saying it's systemic.
Yeah, the system purposely does this. Because you have to understand, let's be very simple about it. We both know that the white man, and I don't like bringing this up because people start making excuses, but this is the truth, and people don't want to hear the truth. We both know the people who run this country are white males. They're the ones who have the vast majority of power in this country. Do you really think that they would want the black man to be equal to them financially in every sense of the word equal? Hell fucking no. Common sense tells
okay,
you
Okay,
no.
I got to cut you off for the sake of time. I got to cut you off. I understand your points, and I'm going to let Hassani respond. Hassani, what are your thoughts on what Area Code 845 said?
I think all of your guests is making very good points. I think there's a lot of truths that are being told. I mean, I have to co-sign on what he's saying. The hardships that black men face in this country are real. We know that disproportionately more black women are graduating with degrees and getting going up the corporate ladder in corporate America much more than black men. But at the same time, there was a study that just came out that said that males now across racial and cultural and ethnic lines are the major benefactor of marriage. And so what they're saying is that there are a whole lot more women, not just black women, but women that are graduating with degrees and maintaining jobs. Because the economy is now being affected the way it is, a lot of males, 90% of a lot of the unemployment rate that's taking place in this country are affecting males, not females. So there's more women in the workforce now. So it's not just a black phenomenon. You know, the world is starting to experience what we've been experiencing for years. So now women are becoming the head of the household, making the money, and it's affecting the dynamics of their relationships. But as it relates to the racial systemic system and how it has pitted itself against black men, that's absolutely true. But at the end of the day, we got to do what we have to do to overcome that. And if that means seeking entrepreneurial pursuits, starting your own business, coming up with other means to make it happen, that's what we have to do. So I understand he's not trying to use it as an excuse, and none of us should, but we have to figure out, since the cards are not in our favor, what can we do to overcome it and be successful in this country still? And so I think if we pursue those avenues rather than just focusing on the opportunities that are not given to us, I think we'll get further as a people. I mean, it's hard. It's hard out there. We're the last hired, the first fired. Everything the brother said is true. So how do we work around that to bring about a solution? So when our conversations are more solution-focused, I think we get much further.
Okay, now I'm going to go back to before you got cut off. We were talking about sisters, because you got a chapter on sisters hating on other sisters, and I told you how my girlfriend, she gets hated on sometimes by other sisters. What are your thoughts about, continued thoughts about sisters hating on other sisters?
I think it's a real scenario, and it's something that 13-year-old girls in high school experience. It's something that 33-year-old women in the workforce experience. I don't think that you can outgrow this issue. There's always been cattiness amongst women, whether black, white, Asian, no matter whatever the case may be, they're in competition over a man, either a man that they're trying to pursue or a man that they even have. It's so unfortunate how many comments I've gotten from women about their best girlfriend sleeping with their men. I mean, there seems to be no sisterhood, no alliance amongst sisters. And as much as we want to demonize black men for how trifling they are, there's a whole lot of trifling women who can't be trusted, who do the same dirt that we accuse a lot of men of. And so that's why I'm saying it's across the board. And until black women can rise up morally and ethically, as well as black men, there's always going to be contention and frustration and animosity. I know sisters. I mean, I'm talking about blood sisters who have issues with one another. I know that there are relationships with mothers and daughters have issues with one another. And so it's a problem that has permeated all throughout the black community, and it's affecting them in a serious, serious way. So it's not just black men hating on black women. It's black women hating themselves. It's black women hating on other black women. And it's a problem that we all have to deal with. Otherwise, it's just going to get perpetually worse day by day, week by week, month by month, and year by year. It'll never turn over to the way it's supposed to be.
Now, I'm going to get to an interesting point. Listeners, we only got about, I want to say, 12 more minutes left in the show. So if you want to get a last second question or comment, call 646-478-5710. Now, you got an interesting piece in there, because brothers, of course, we think about sex a lot. Not to say that women don't, but men definitely think about sex a lot. And one thing I have noticed over the years is that white men, and I'm kind of generalizing and stereotyping here because there's exceptions both ways, but generally, white men tend to put more emphasis on women's chest. Men tend to put more emphasis on women's ass. And you say that we become obsessed with black women and their asses to the point where women who don't have that kind of, you know, as they say, round ghetto booty, almost become somewhat insecure because they feel like they're not truly representing the culture. Give me your thoughts and comments about the emphasis on women's asses, particularly by the hip-hop genre.
I mean, it's true. When you look at most, XXL, Source, you know, all these hip-hop, Black Men's Magazine, that's where the focus is. You have a whole lot of crotch shots, butt shots. I mean, just look at the dances. I mean, when you look at the videos, they either pee-popping on the handstand, booty clapping, and so we accentuate the black booty. We do. I mean, and it's been a history of this. I mean, it goes all the way back to Sarah Barton that we talk about in the book. But, you know, that has been the focus. The white standard of beauty has been on the chest. The black standard of beauty has been on the behind. And you, listen, I had a wife who actually emailed me who was going through issues with her husband because her husband wasn't attracted to her because she didn't have a curvature round, large derriere. And
wait,
so she
is
was,
that the woman? Because I read, there was an excerpt from a woman in your book. Is that the same woman?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so now she's contemplating having butt surgery just to satisfy her husband. And
oh,
so
wow.
This is what I'm talking about the insecurities that we can create in our spouses. When we don't value not only the one we marry, but their body and their physique and make them feel beautiful about themselves, we cause all types of insecurities. So now she's considering risking her life just to get butt injections to please her husband. You'd be surprised how many women I've come across who have considered getting butt injections. And so now the new thing is, well, is it real or is it fake? Well, a fake booty looks like this, and a real booty look like that. And now you got women they're in a position where they have to prove that their body is their own, you know, because
wow.
There's so many people that are getting these. But by the way, I mean, a lot of these video vixens and models and these hip-hop videos, they secretly have admitted that their bodies are not what you see in the video and on the magazine spread. They had to go through surgery to get that. So that's become – and that's the problem with porn. Pornography is not real. It's an optical illusion. And unfortunately, the taste buds of men in general change based upon the images that they see in videos and on magazine spreads. Then they take a look at the woman who's laying in bed next to them and say how the woman who's in the bed with them doesn't measure up to what they see in the video or in the magazine spread. But what it does is it creates a lack of intimacy in our relationships, frustration in our relationships, because we want our women to be like what we see, but what we see 9 times out of 10 is not real. So whether it's women getting breast implants, women getting butt injections, it's causing a problem in terms of how we deal with one another. And so you just got to love your body. You know, if you're overweight and you feel like you need to get yourself in shape, get yourself in shape. But love the body that you're in. And if you love yourself, your man will love it too. And men, I'm telling you, the whole pornography influence over men, I'm telling you, is crippling. It's crippling. A lot of the security that women once had in themselves is creating insecurity. And so sometimes we contribute to the problem, but they contribute to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Area code 702, you're now upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest for the evening, Hassani Pettiford. What's your question or comment?
Hi, Alan. How are you? This is Frantonia.
Frantonia, how are you, Frantonia?
I'm fantastic. I'm absolutely enjoying your show. I am
Thank you.
Loving what your guest is saying. Let me preface my comment and my question by first saying that I am a single African-American female who typically finds myself the odd woman out, if you will, when these conversations are had amongst a group of women, because I am adamant about making women take responsibility for their own actions and their own behaviors, and adamant about making women take an objective view of what is really going on in our relationships, particularly the relationships between African-American men and women, up to and including doing the historical, you know, research on what has really taken place in this relationship dynamic that we have, be it mother and son or, you know, a man and woman trying to have a romantic relationship. Wow, just been listening in. There's so many different things that you guys have touched on that I just want to take a quick opportunity to comment on. You know, recently Steve Harvey, not knocking him or his book or anything like that, came out with a book, of course, Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. And the biggest question that popped into my mind when that book came out was, okay, great, but who's teaching women how to act like a lady? What I mean by that is, I'll give a great example. I just recently attended the funeral of my grandmother who lived in the rural South. And so going back there and being able to sit back and really go into observation mode and check out what these couples that have been married 50, 60, 30, 40 years, they've done, what the role of the man is and what the role of the woman is and really how they act like ladies. Too many of us are acting like men. And when it comes down to a man maturing to the point where he's ready to have a woman in his life, he wants a woman. He doesn't want a woman who has a resume she can read off or all of her material possessions or her strong, independent black woman, neck rolling, you know, PhD. He doesn't want that. He wants a wife. He wants a woman. And so I love what you are saying, Brother Hassani. I heard you actually on another show where people have called in and bashed you even on the title and some of the, you know, the perspectives you're taking on things. I love the fact that a man is addressing this issue. I love the fact that I now know that I'm not the only one standing in the position for the perspectives that you are expressing, because I too have expressed these perspectives. As a woman, though, here's my question. We know what the problem is. Right? We know the historical perspective on it. I know that I have become, you know, in general, the black woman has become this mutated thing that she was never intended to be, too strong, too black for her own good. How do we fix it? Because there's a huge imbalance between the masculine energy that the black man is to represent and the feminine energy that the black woman is to represent, because it's all twisted up. How do we fix it?
That's a very, very good question. The last chapter of the book is entitled Black Women Are Hated, Now What? And so it offers practical solutions of what we must begin to do to heal the problems in our own personal lives and in our relationships. I mean, there's so many layers that we can go into. You know, we got into this problem over a 390-year period, and so it's going to take us some time to get out of it. But at the end of the day, I think that, number one, we need a historical perspective. Because if we had that, we could empathize with each other a whole lot better when it comes to the issues that manifest in our relationships. I think that as a people, we need cultural relationship counseling, because the things, the experiences that we have in our own relationships are somewhat different than others because of our blackness, because of the roles that we've played in the society as black people. And so it affects our relationships in a completely different way. So I think that if we had true cultural relationship counseling, we would learn how to deal with these issues that we have of role of the gender issues and the role reversals and all these things that are playing out. I think that we need emotional healing. Oftentimes we jump from one relationship to the other relationship, and just like the singer she had the song called Bag Lady. I don't know where my mind is right now, but Bag Lady. Oftentimes we carry so much baggage from one relationship into another relationship, and we hold our present partner hostage to past situations because we never healed from our past, and I think that we need to do it. I think we need spiritual transformation. We need to connect in terms of our relationship with our God. See, every person has three relationships. The relationship you have with yourself, that's your internal relationship. The relationship that you have with God, that's your vertical relationship. And the relationship that you have with one another, that's your horizontal relationship. Unfortunately, we focus so much on horizontal relationships that we've neglected the internal and the vertical, which leaves us no foundation to stand on. And if we all had a spiritual transformation and had a true connection with our God, I think in essence we would represent the feminine essence and the masculine essence of God. Because when we come together, then we will represent the totality of who God is in the earth. I think we need personal growth and development. We need to begin to look at ourselves and be honest. You know, I spoke at a college today. I'm in Jersey, but I drove down to Maryland, and I spoke at a college today. And so one of the questions I asked them is, if you take an honest assessment of who you are, would you date you? Would you date yourself with all of your issues, with all of your idiosyncrasies and inconsistencies and contradictions and faults and flaws? Would you date you? And if the answer is no, then you're really not prepared to date someone else. So get yourself together. We have to learn how to master the season of singleness. Because when you're single and alone and all by yourself, that is the time to be self-centered. That is the time to focus on self. to build yourself up spiritually, emotionally, physically, psychologically, to become the best you that you can be, so that when you enter into the relationship, you enter whole and complete. I think that we need to develop couple skills. Oftentimes, we get into relationships and don't know how to maintain it. Let me ask a rhetorical question. Have you ever been on a plane before? I'm sure you have. Do you care how good the pilot looks? Do you care how wonderful his physique is? Or do you care whether he has the skill sets to operate that plane? And oftentimes, we get into relationships for the wrong reasons, and we don't seek out individuals who have characteristics that will foster a positive relationship. I mean, I can go on and on and on and on and on. There's so many things that we have to do. We can't solve a complex problem with one simple solution. So this is the beginning. This is the beginning, this book, of the healing process and the solutions for our people.
Thank you, Frantonio, for calling in. I'm going to take one more call, and then I got to wrap it up because we're running out of time. 980, you're going to have 30 seconds to give me a quick question or a quick comment. 980, yes. You're up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your quick question or quick comment?
Yes, this question is for Hassani Payford. My name is Thomas. I'm calling from North Carolina. How do you feel about Francis Quest Welsing's theory in terms of, like, for black men, black women, waiting till, you know, for black women beyond the age of 35 and for black men the age of, actually black men age 35, black women age of 30 to get married and have offspring. She says, because he talks about that, development of yourself and learning about your surroundings, being more self-aware, understanding the system of racism we live in. How do you feel about that theory that she has?
In theory, I understand her position. And there's a lot of merit to what she's saying. You know, when you look at it statistically, most people who marry very young have a higher rate of divorce than those that do get married in their mid to late 20s and early 30s. I think they're just still developing as a person. At 21 years old, you don't know who you are. You've only had a few years of experience, and so there's a lot that you need to experience. I think it's important to date, to have multiple relationships, because when you do that, you get to learn who you are. You get to learn what you like and what you don't like, what you're willing to put up with and what you won't be willing to put up with. And so I think that there are certain social skills and relational skills that you develop by meeting and getting to know different people. The problem is we allow sex to enter into the equation often too soon in the relationship, which affects it. But as it relates to getting married and settling down and having a family, I think that we all need educational experiences, the experience of traveling, the experience of getting to know who we are so that we can bring something to the table as opposed to having deficiencies and being a liability in the relationship. So I don't know if I can necessarily say wait till you're 33. But no, I can't say that because we all have a different maturity level. We all have different experiences at different stages in our life. But I think at the end of the day, we need to operate in maturity. Once we've reached the age of maturation, then we are prepared. For some people, it may be 30. For others, it could be 25. So like I said, in theory and in principle, I agree. But in practical terms, it's all based upon the individual and their own personal growth and development.
Real quick, tell my listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web, Hassani.
For all of you who are on the chat room and listening all over the world, I want you to go right now to www.whywehatblackwomen.com. Get your copy today. You can also call my toll-free number at 1-888-237-6101. Once again, that's 1-888-237-6101. And for anybody who's listening right now and purchases your copy today, if you identify yourself as a listener of this show, I will throw in some bonuses just for you as a way of saying thank you. Get your copy. Buy it for your mother, your grandmother, your sisters, your nieces, your brothers, your fathers, your husbands. Every member of the black community has to have this book because it will begin to transform our nation. People are rising up all over the world. It's time for you to rise and take your place.
That's right. See, you mentioned Alan Roger Curry or Upfront and Straightforward, and my man Hassani is going to hook you up. Hassani, it has been my pleasure to have you as a guest on my show. You've really broken some stuff down. You're very thorough, and much respect and continued success to you.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate the opportunity.
And again, listeners, next week I won't be on the air. Check out one of my archive podcast shows next week. I will be back 2 weeks from tonight. I don't know who my specific guest will be, But I'll let you know over the internet, through Facebook or whatever. And until then, go Colts in the Super Bowl. I just hope it's really a good game. Have a safe and enjoyable weekend. Peace.